Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, I have a question from a juror. Where would the casings go if the gun was held sideways?
Just for clarification, sideways either way.
Why don't you tell us for either way?
So if I was to cant it sideways and the butt was down, it could potentially go up and fall to the left side because of the way the gravity would be. However, if you turn it this way, it's angling it further down. And again, it depends on how it hits the ground, what it can bounce off of.
All right. Any other juror questions? Not seeing any. Follow-up from the defense based on that question?
No.
State?
No, Your Honor.
All right, sir, you can step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. State can call its next witness.
Thank you.
All right, come on right up here in front and be sworn in.
Hi, can you spell your name for the record?
Sandra
C-A-S-S-A-N-D-R-A. Nucon, Y-N-C-O-A. You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. To the jury.
My name is Cassandra Anglon. I'm a detective with the Chandler Police Department in our robbery homicide unit.
Can you tell us about your career with the Chandler Police Department?
So next week I will have 24 years at the department. Started in patrol, graduated through the Phoenix Police Academy. I have no prior, all my experiences with Chandler. Started in patrol, I worked there a couple years, and then was selected to move into a newer unit they created, which was more of a general investigations unit. Worked assaults, burglaries, thefts, kind of entry-level detective-type cases. We had a reorganization with, I'd been in that unit about a year, year and a half, and that unit morphed into our family violence unit. So at that point, my cases became primarily physical child abuse cases, some missing person type cases, and then the majority was domestic violence, assaults, aggravated assaults, things like that. Worked in that unit for a couple years and then moved into our narcotics and organized crime unit and worked in that unit for about 5 years, doing primarily narcotic, large-scale narcotics investigations. In September of 2009, I was selected and moved into our robbery and homicide unit, and I've been in that unit since September of 2009, where I am now.
As part of your job, are you called out to respond to scenes?
Yes.
And what are your normal working hours?
So I work, we work 4-10s, so 4 10-hour shifts a week. There are 6 people in our unit, so I am one of the 3 that works Tuesday to Fridays, and then the other half of our unit works Monday to Thursdays. But there is one detective in our unit that's on call all the time. And then, depending on the scale of the case, the on-call is responsible for being available to come in off hours, but depending on the scale of the case, they'll call in additional detectives to help, sometimes supplementing from other units within the department, depending on the case.
Were you working on Thursday, July 11th of 2019?
I was.
And where were you located? Where's your office?
So my office is at our main precinct, which is in downtown Chandler. But that day, I was not in the office. I was driving to kind of a community event that was in West Chandler.
Okay. Were you asked to respond to a scene at 5531 South Four Peaks Place in Chandler, Maricopa County, Arizona?
I was.
Why were you asked to respond to that house?
So I had initially heard some radio traffic about a potential shooting that had happened there. And then, so I was aware of the call for service that was going on for that patrol had responded to. And then I was contacted by my supervisor shortly thereafter by phone, because I wasn't in the station. And they had asked that myself and several detectives respond down to assume that investigation from patrol.
Do you recall approximately when you arrived at that house?
I believe it was right around 9:28, 9:30 is my arrival time on CAD, but it would have been within a couple minutes of that, depending on how significant the radio traffic was that I could get out onto the radio.
In 2019, as a detective, did you have body-worn camera assigned to you?
We did not.
So you were not wearing a body cam unit at that time?
No, we did not get ours issued until, I believe, a couple years later.
Okay. Can you describe for us the crime scene when you arrived?
So when I arrived in the neighborhood, it's a gated community. I arrived on the north side of where the residence was. Marked patrol units and uniformed patrol officers were there. There was already a yellow crime scene about a house or two north and a house or two south. And I could see several of the initial patrol officers that had responded that were present when I got there.
When you got there, was the fire engine still there?
I believe they were, but there was what we call our CARE unit. Our CR-288 is the crisis unit. They're a fire personnel, but they respond out to our scenes at our request as well.
Okay. And so that was there?
Correct.
Did you observe any individuals that you learned to be the shooter at the scene?
I did, Alex Cox.
Can you describe where you saw him?
So when I approached the house, I was walking south towards the house. He was seated on a curb. I remember there being like a trash can or something right there. And Officer Krautheim was outside. And I remember seeing him sitting there as I walked past up to a supervisor at the scene.
And can you describe for us the demeanor of Alex Cox when you went by him?
He was sitting on the curb, didn't really appear, just kind of normal, wasn't really agitated or upset. He had what looked like, I think it was a paper towel or Kleenex in his hand. And at one point he reached back and kind of touched the back of his head. But he was just seated, just kind of sitting there.
Okay. Did you observe yourself any injuries at that time to his head?
I did not. I didn't have contact with him at the scene at all.
Okay. When you arrive at a scene like that as a detective, what's sort of the process of, what does everyone do when you get there?
So initially what we try is that the first one or two like investigative type personnel. Usually we'll make immediate contact with the supervisor on scene, usually a sergeant or a lieutenant, and try to just kind of do a quick assessment or triage of what's going on. What is kind of the quick initial what happened? Is anybody outstanding? What are kind of the things we need to do? Because then as personnel from like my unit and other investigative units arrive, we can start assigning tasks and roles. We always, by practice, assign a case agent, and then a scene agent is separate, and then any other personnel that get there start assigning tasks, what needs to be done, what needs to happen.
So what is the like roles of a detective versus the patrol officers who've been there?
So patrol officers are going to be your first responders. They are going to be the ones that dispatch when you call 911 or the non-emergency number. Patrol is going to come to your house first. They're the uniformed in a marked patrol car. They're going to respond out and do the initial investigation, initial scene safety, initial first aid, until it's safe for fire to get there. They're going to be your initial first responders. If the call or event or incident that they're responding to is going to be more significant or more serious or maybe needs more specialized equipment or investigation or potentially they might need a search warrant, then you're going to see where detectives are going to get called out to assume an investigation from patrol. So there will be some overlap. And then once we come out and kind of take the investigation over, patrol then gets released from the event, and it will become kind of property of the detectives that come out to assume the case.
Do you have patrol officers still helping things like securing the scene and making sure that, you know, no one is just running up into the house or something?
Absolutely.
While you were on scene, did you notice any other civilians kind of waiting around?
Yes.
Who did you notice?
At one point, I realized that where Officer Krautheim was standing, basically across from the house, it was within the crime scene, that an adult female, Lori Vallow, and then her daughter, Tylee, had at some point got there. I'm not sure exactly when, but I realized that they were standing in the vicinity of Officer Krautheim within the crime scene near a red car.
Did you see the interaction between Officer Krautheim and these two, Lori Vallow and Tylee?
I did, from across the street.
Okay. When you saw that interaction, did you know who they were at that point?
I did not know who they were. I found out a short time later.
Okay. So did Officer Krautheim advise you and other detectives who they were?
Yes.
Okay. So you said the female was Lori Vallow?
Correct.
Do you see her in the courtroom today?
I do.
Can you point her out and identify what she's wearing?
She's seated at the defense table wearing like a navy blue blazer.
Your Honor, may the record reflect the witness has identified the defendant.
Mitchell.
Can you describe Lori Vallow's demeanor when you saw her like, across the street there?
So she was standing, the car they were near was parked along the curb, and she was standing basically in front of the parked car, and Tylee was standing next to her, just kind of appeared to be having this kind of ordinary interaction with Officer Krautheim, just kind of talking to him, didn't seem real animated or emotional, just seemed very kind of ordinary and kind of nonchalant.
Were any police cars visible at the crime scene?
Yes.
And so there's yellow crime scene tape up?
Correct.
So when Officer Krautheim came over, did he talk to you and some other detectives?
He did.
And did he advise you about his interaction with Ms. Vallow and Tiley?
He didn't talk to me about their interaction. He just more identified who they were.
Okay.
And at that point, we had had some discussion about kind of additional rules that had just developed.
So at some time while you're sitting there and you're standing around talking with sergeants and whatnot, is that when you learned who you believed to be the shooter Alex Cox was?
Yes.
And at some time while you are again getting these updates, did you learn who the deceased male was inside the residence?
Correct.
And who was that?
That was Charles Vallow.
During this time, did it become known to you the relationship between Lori Vallow and Alex Cox?
Correct. They were brother-sister.
And during this time, did you become aware of the relationship between Ms. Vallow and Charles Vallow?
Correct. Husband-wife.
After you, during the time when you were speaking with these officers, were you updated by Officer Krautheim about whether or not Lori Vallow knew her husband was dead?
No. I had talked to my sergeant, actually, about speaking with her specifically about doing what we refer to as a death notification.
Well, let me go back. So did you believe that Lori Vallow knew her husband was dead?
I did not.
You thought she had no idea?
I didn't think she knew because she wasn't there when I got there.
Had you been advised that by Officer Krautheim or his sergeant relating to information he had received from Alex Cox that she was not present?
I didn't believe that she was present at the time the incident occurred prior to me speaking with her.
Okay. And that was based upon information that you had obtained from briefings?
Correct.
Okay. Since you thought that Lori Vallow did not know her husband was deceased, what did you do?
So I had a brief discussion with my sergeant, and we agreed that it would be the right thing to do a death notification to her. She is legally his wife. They are married. She would be his legal next of kin. She's standing basically in the crime scene, and I think professionally it's in delaying letting someone know that their loved one is deceased isn't appropriate. So we made a decision at that point to contact her to do an actual death notification so it was clear that he was deceased.
Okay. So because she's there at the scene, do you just walk up to her while she's standing right there in front of the car to notify her? How do you do that?
No. So her and Tylee were now seated within the care unit that I had mentioned, our CR-288. They have a van, and we utilize it a lot. So they were seated within that van. I had approached the van with my sergeant, and my intention was to try to get her to come out of the van because Tylee was in there with her so I could have a discussion with her outside of the view of any children. When I made contact with her, we ended up having the conversation with her in the van with Tylee.
So let me ask this. What was her demeanor when you see her in this van?
Pretty much the same as her demeanor before, not real emotional. She was pretty calm, didn't seem overly affected.
I think you had used nonchalant previously.
Yeah, it's a good word to describe it.
So how did that notification go down? Were you able to tell her what happened?
So, opened the van, I made contact with her. I think at some point I asked her something to the effect if she would step out of the van to talk to me. And at that point she said that she already knew because she was there, which was kind of a surprise. I wasn't necessarily expecting that. And at that point I confirmed with her that he had died and he was deceased, and quickly kind of conferred with my sergeant away that at this point her and Tylee are now witnesses to the event and they need to be interviewed, obviously.
Okay. So it's normal for detectives to have to make death notifications?
Yes.
And you have made death notifications in other cases?
Unfortunately, yes.
And so in this case, you yourself was the one surprised to learn that you didn't have to give her a death notification.
I was.
Did her demeanor change at all when she's telling you that she was there and knew he was dead?
No.
So at this point now that you know that it's not just a death notification, she now may have relevant information, what happens at that point?
I had made a request of her that we would like to obviously talk to her, and if I could transport them back to the police station, if possible. We like to do the interviews in a more contained environment, obviously one that we can record, and one that's not in the middle of a crime scene. So I had asked if her and Tylee would come back to the police station with me, and I ultimately ended up driving them, both of them, back to the police station.
Okay. Is there a special area at the police station that you took them to?
I did. I took them to what's referred to as our FAC, which is our Family Advocacy Center.
What's the difference between the FAC and, you know, maybe what people have seen on TV of just like the cold room with a table and two chairs?
So the Family Advocacy Center is a separate part of the police department. It actually has a separate entrance, and it's designed specifically for like victims of crime. We do forensic interviews of children there. There are not uniformed officers that work within that area. It's designed specifically for like victims of crime. We do use it sometimes, obviously, for witnesses. There will never be like in custodial, like suspect interviews or anything in there. It's a separate section of the police department that's kind of an entity on its own.
So when you're going to interview Lori Vallow, do you have any concept sort of what she saw, what her involvement is at that point?
No.
So when you said you drove her and Tylee to the police station?
I did.
So they left their car at the scene?
They did. They came with me in my city vehicle.
Can you describe Lori's demeanor as you're driving her to the police station?
So, well, obviously I drove. She was in the front passenger seat. Tylee was seated behind her. The majority of the drive, we were actually talking about Tylee. It's a little bit awkward because you're trying not to talk about anything that happened until you can get to the police station. So you're trying to kind of make this strange small talk almost. We were talking primarily about Tylee and her schooling and such. We were driving and she was just kind of chattering along as we were driving.
Did she seem stressed at all while she's talking to you?
Not really.
Did she, was she crying or emotional at all while you're driving?
No.
While you were at, before you left in the car, did she ever try to ask you any questions about how her brother was doing or what, you know, what's going on with her husband or anything like that?
Not of me, no.
When you got her to the police station, how long did that take approximately?
It's probably a 20-minute drive from the house to where the station is, about.
And was she chatting away the whole time?
For the majority of it.
When you get to the police station, do you separate Lori and her daughter, Tylee?
I did.
And was that interview audio and video recorded?
It was.
Was she free to leave at any time?
Yes.
Did you know if she had a cell phone with her when you were interviewing her?
I don't believe, well, she did, she had a phone with her at one point, but she wasn't on it or doing anything.
Okay. Did she provide you with a cell phone number when you were talking to her?
In the initial part of the interview, yes. The initial part of the interview is biographical name, date of birth, phone number, address, that type of thing.
Did you ever ask to look at her cell phone?
I did not.
Did she ever offer to show you her cell phone?
She did not.
Did you know at that point, well, let me ask you, had you been inside the scene at that point, inside the house?
So I did not go in the house until later. Prior to me coming back to the scene later, I was never inside the house.
Okay. So at that point, when you are first meeting with Lori, driving her there, did you know if she had Charles Vallow's cell phone with her?
I did not know.
Did you sort of assume that Charles Vallow's cell phone would have been at the scene with him?
I did assume that, yes.
So I want to start with, you told us that you asked some basic biographical information. And Your Honor, if I can have my paralegal approach with Exhibit 186.
Go ahead.
Have you watched that CD, Exhibit 186, previously?
I have, yes.
Is your initial on it to identify that you've watched it?
My initials and my badge number.
And is that to identify that you recognize that as the part of the interview where you're asking Lori Vallow for biographical information?
Correct.
And that shows it's an accurate copy of that portion of the interview?
Yes.
State will move to admit Exhibit 186.
Any objection?
The only objection is to the portion, Your Honor. It's not going to be a full,
it's just a portion redacted. Of it. Hmm? Are you saying it's redacted?
This is only one portion of it. We're going to be going through lots of portions of it.
What was the number?
186.
186 is admitted.
And Your Honor, if I can publish it.
Go ahead.
Laura's your first name, right?
Yeah.
L-A-U-R.
L-O-R-I.
Okay. And then what's your last name?
Vallow. V-A-L-L-O-W.
And your date of birth?
6/26/73.
And then your phone number?
808-755-5452.
And you live at the house, right?
Okay. So, in this portion that we see in 186, she gave you a phone number of the 808-755-5452?
Correct.
During your investigation, did you learn that Lori Vallow had more than one cell phone?
I did.
Did you learn whether or not she was employed outside the home?
I don't believe she was.
Okay. Did you ever read her Miranda rights?
No.
Why not?
She was not in custody. She was there consensually. And at the time that I was talking to her, I was talking to her as what I believe to be a witness.
Okay. Now, did you talk to her about sort of when she moved into the house, some background about her, her son, and Charles, and that relationship?
Yes.
If my paralegal can approach with Exhibit 187.
Go ahead.
Do Do you recognize Exhibit 187, again, having your initials and badge number on it?
I do, yes.
And is that marked as clip two, the portion of your interview where Lori Vallow is telling you about sort of moving into the house and some background on JJ and Charles?
That's correct.
State will move to admit 187.
Any objection?
The objection would be Rule 106, Your Honor, the rule of completeness. We would ask that the whole thing be played.
All right.
The entire video.
The objection's overruled. The exhibit's admitted.
And if we can publish it.
To this house 3 weeks ago because he offered to get me a house here where all my family is. So okay. We were in Houston. And so he's like, we had decided to separate or whatever. So mm-hmm. He's like, well, I'll pay for a house for you and for JJ and whatever, because he's all about JJ. He's never about Tylee, but he's all about JJ. Because we adopted him together. He's his great nephew. We adopted him as a baby. So he was like a drug baby and had all these problems. And so we adopted him as a baby, and so we've been raising him together. And he travels all the time for business, so he's used to just going back and forth. So he's always gone like Monday through Friday. So he came when we first moved in and brought me stuff from Houston, like a U-Haul. And then he hasn't been back. But it's all these threats on my phone all the time, you know, like whatever, all these things. And then he told me...
What kind of threats?
Just... you'd have to read them to me, but he's always mad at me, right? Okay. And he doesn't want a divorce, but I don't like him and don't want to deal with him, so that's just how it is. Like.
So... I want to talk a little bit about this portion of your interview with Lori Vallow. She told you about the adoption of JJ by her and Charles, correct?
Correct.
And that JJ suffered from some disabilities.
That's right.
During this part of the interview, did she tell you that Charles had sent some threatening messages on the phone?
She did. She said there were threats on her phone.
Did she ever offer to show you those threats?
She did not.
So she has a phone with her, but she didn't show you anything?
No.
Did she ever explain what she meant?
No.
And we had just discussed that she had given you a phone number of 808, correct?
Correct.
And during that investigation, or this investigation, sort of, in the days that followed, did you learn later that most of the communication between Charles Vallow and Lori Vallow was on one of her other cell phones, the one with a 480 area code?
I did.
So even though she gives you a totally different number, that's not the phone that you understood to have the communications between her and Charles?
Right.
Does she also say in that clip that... Charles Vallow didn't want a divorce from her?
That's correct.
And did she tell you that she didn't even like Charles?
Yes.
And that she didn't want to deal with him?
Yes.
And that he traveled to just kind of get away?
Correct.
When you were talking with Lori Vallow, did she tell you that Charles had filed something against her saying she was crazy and asking to limit her supervised visitation?
That's correct.
Did she tell you that sort of in retaliation that she basically stopped talking to him and JJ for 30 days?
Correct, that he was in Houston. JJ was in Houston with Charles.
Okay. If I can have my paralegal approach with Exhibit 188. And do you recognize Exhibit 188 as also being signed and have your badge number on that?
Yes.
Meaning you've reviewed it and has identified that as that portion of your interview with Lori Vallow, including those areas of the supervised visitation?
Correct.
State will move to admit Exhibit 188.
Your Honor, we're going to object that the whole interview should be played.
All right. 188? 188 is admitted.
And if we can publish it.
Go ahead.
Anything or whatever, and then he filed something against me and said I'm only gonna get supervised visits because I'm crazy and blah blah blah, you know the story. And so I just didn't talk to him for like 30 days and let him take care of him and let him see what I've been doing.
So she, I know it got cut off sort of in the end there, she told you that after he filed this paperwork saying she was only going to get supervised visits, that she just didn't talk to him for 30 days.
Correct.
All right, let's take our afternoon stretch break, recess, 15 minutes. Please remember the admonition. Juror 15 is the only member of the jury present. Juror 15, when we did a sidebar this morning with the white noise. All right, let's bring the jury in. Present, please be seated. Go ahead and continue your direct.
Thank you. So, Detective, when we broke, we had just watched Exhibit 188, a portion of your interview where Lori Vallo was telling you that Charles had filed something against her, saying she was crazy and asking to limit her to supervised visitation. Did you understand or know what that was about at that time?
I did not.
Did you talk to Lori Vallo about sort of Charles coming into town?
Yes.
So you understood that he did not live here in Phoenix?
I did.
And did she talk to you about booking a room for Charles and that he was going to come out and see JJ, his son?
Yes.
If my paralegal can approach with Exhibit 189.
Go ahead.
And do you recognize Exhibit 189, again, that says Clip 4 with both your signature and badge?
Yes.
And is that the portion of the interview where you are talking to Lori about Charles coming into town, him traveling and coming here to see JJ?
It is.
State will move to admit 189.
Any objection?
We'll object, Your Honor. The defense will on Rule 106 of completion. Ask that the whole interview just be played.
All right. Was it 109?
189.
I'm sorry. 189 is admitted.
And if we could publish it.
The time because he travels for business and the business pays for it, right? So I said, I will book you a hotel nearby.
What does he do?
He works with teachers and their retirement plans, but he goes to them at their school.
Okay.
He mostly works in California.
Okay. No.
That's the vocal? Okay. So she advised that she booked a hotel for him.
So the audio wasn't on initially when that played.
Okay.
But there is a portion in the interview where she does tell me that.
Where she says, I'll book you a hotel.
Correct.
During your interview, did Lori Vallo tell you that Charles traveled a lot for his work?
Yes.
And did she tell you that his travel was an excuse not to care for his son?
Yes, that he was gone a lot.
Did Lori Vallow tell you that she had left Charles Vallow in Texas and moved back to Arizona?
That's correct.
And did she tell you that Charles was still living in Texas?
Yes, in the Houston area.
Did she say that Charles had rented her a house for her and JJ and her daughter Tylee to live?
Correct.
Did you talk to her about whether or not she had an interaction with Charles the night before, on
yes.
July 10th? And did she advise that it was just limited to a text message?
Correct. Not in person, just via the phone.
Okay. My paralegal can approach with Exhibit 190. And do you recognize that again with your initials and badge number?
Correct.
As a portion of your interview where Lori Vallow was telling you that Charles was not at the house that night, he just let her know he'd be over at 7:30 the next morning?
That's right.
State will move to admit 190.
Same objection?
Same objection, Your Honor.
Right. 190 is admitted.
His macho attitude. Mm-hmm. And so he came this morning, ice skating to everybody.
So he got in last night, but he wasn't at the house last night.
Yeah, I didn't hear from him, except
okay.
for he texted me and said, I'll be there at 7:30 to pick up JJ.
Okay.
And I was like...
So you understood that she had no interaction with Charles on July 10th?
In person, correct.
But she knew what time to expect Charles the next morning on July 11th at 7:30.
Right.
When you were talking with her, did you talk to her about what time Charles actually showed up?
Yes.
And did she say 7:40, 7:35-ish?
I believe she said 7:35.
My paralegal can approach with Exhibit 191.
Go ahead.
And again, do you recognize Exhibit 191 as having been initialed and have your badge number on it?
I do.
And is that in clip number 6, the portion of your interview where she's talking about what time Charles showed up that morning?
Correct.
State will move to admit 191.
Same objection.
Yes, Your Honor, the defense objects.
All right, 191 is admitted.
And if we can publish.
Go ahead.
So, do you remember about what time he got there?
He said he'd be there 7:30, but it was more like 7:40-ish or 7:35, I don't know.
Okay.
But I remember thinking, looking at the clock, and he wasn't there at 7:30, and he's usually Mr.
Punctual.
Yes.
So, at this point, you understand that Lori Vallow knew Charles was coming to Arizona.
Correct.
And she knew he was going to show up on the 11th at 7:30 a.m.
Correct.
And that he was coming there to pick up their son, JJ.
Yes.
Did the defendant talk to you about when Charles shows up, sort of how they get JJ in the car, and what that she goes out to the car with Charles and JJ, and then that she ultimately ends up with Charles's cell phone?
That's right.
My paralegal can approach with Exhibit 192. And do you again recognize that with your initials and your badge number?
I do.
Clip number 7, a portion of the interview where you are being told by Lori Vallow that she put JJ in the car, and eventually how she got Charles's phone?
Correct.
State will move to admit 192.
Same objection.
The defense will object to 106.
192. 192.
I'm sorry. The rule 106 is the objection. I'm sorry.
Got you. All right. 192 is admitted.
And if I may publish.
Go ahead.
You know, he's just been difficult. So
yeah.
Anyway. So I got Jay to step ready. And he was like, well, and he's like this about timing. He's like, I'm leaving in 20 minutes because it's like 15 minutes to the school. And like, you can't get there early. They don't open the gates until 8:20 or something like that. And I said, well, why don't you just go now? I don't want him in the house. I'm like, why don't you just go now and take him to Burger King because that's what he likes for breakfast. And he's very particular about food. Yeah. Like, he wanted chicken fries for breakfast and a Sprite. Like, and I just can't believe that because if you don't give him a sentence, it's like on the floor screaming, dragging him into school. Like, yeah. And he's big and he's heavy and it's hard for me to handle. But anyway, so I said, just go. And so he said, okay. So I gave him a backpack. He got in the car. This is his MO, right? He always leaves something in the house and comes back. He never leaves the first time. I always expect my husband to come back into the house, right? So I guess he had left his phone on the counter.
So he initially left with the backpack and with JJ? And
so he put them in the car,
okay,
in the driveway, and then he came back in, right? So I kissed JJ goodbye. He came back in, and his phone was on the counter, and I had his phone. And he was, like, giving me my phone, and I was like, why don't you show me your text that you've been texting, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever, because he's like acting really weird, like he's plotting something against me. Like, I'm like, why are you even here? Like, what did you come here for? You know, he's been talking to my other brother, and my brother came into town at the same time last night, and I haven't talked to my brother in a while, my other brother. And I was like, and so he was texting him on the phone when he first got to my house, and I'm like, why are you texting Adam? Like, do you even talk to him? Like, my other brother.
So in this portion, Lori Vallow told you that she kissed JJ goodbye and Charles took JJ in the backpack out to the car?
Correct.
And that she went inside and got a hold of Charles's cell phone?
Correct.
And did she tell you that Charles came back inside and saw her with the phone and told her to give it back to him?
That's right.
Did Lori Vallow ever tell you that she gave the phone back to Charles?
She did not.
So Lori Vallow is telling you that Charles is demanding the phone back, and she instead says, show me your text messages?
Correct.
We heard previously that Lori Vallow had told you that Charles had taken JJ away from her for 30 days, and so she didn't talk to him, right?
That he had JJ for 30 days and they didn't talk, yes.
And so now she's telling you she's demanding to know why he's in Arizona? Why he came to Arizona? Is that what she said? Why are you even here?
I believe so, yes.
So Charles had had to take care of his son and now he's here to visit his son?
Correct.
Is what
Correct.
She even said?
Yes.
So did she tell you that she had confronted Charles about texting her brother, Adam?
In
this portion of the interview.
In the portion of the interview, she discusses with me asking Charles why he's talking to her brother, Adam.
And were you aware at this time, when you are interviewing Lori Vallow, that Charles and Adam had been texting?
No.
Did you even know who Adam was at that point?
I didn't know who Adam was.
And again, I think you told us you were not aware at that time that Lori Vallow was in possession of Charles Vallow's phone.
Correct.
And were you aware at that time that Charles had flown Adam in?
No.
So you're just kind of hearing this and listening to what she's saying?
Correct.
Did you go into some additional detail about, again, Charles demanding that Lori Vallow give him back his cell phone?
Yes.
I can have my paralegal approach with clip 197.
Go ahead.
Move that out of order. Clip 8. Do you recognize Exhibit 197, Clip 8?
I do.
And again, did you initial and put your badge number on that?
I did.
And did that reflect, again, another portion of your interview where Lori Vallow is describing to you what is going on when Charles Vallow is demanding his phone back, what she does?
Correct.
State will move to admit Exhibit 197.
Same objection.
Defense will object to playing the whole video, Your Honor.
197?
Yes.
197 is admitted.
And if we may publish.
Go ahead.
And 14.
Okay. So this morning he comes back in and...
He comes back in, I wouldn't give him his phone. He was screaming at me to give him his phone. He was very worried about whatever was on his text that he did not want me to see. And so I was just holding it there and he was screaming at me. And I was kind of walking towards around the house with it so he couldn't get it. He's like reaching for it and stuff like that.
So... this is the second time that Lori Vallow is telling you that Charles is telling her to give him back his phone.
Correct.
And she is refusing to do so.
Yes.
And she advised that she was walking around the house, right?
Correct.
So he's screaming at her and she's walking around.
Correct.
During this initial confrontation over the phone, does Lori Vallow tell you it's just her and Charles?
Yes.
And so did you ever ask her why she didn't just give the phone back to Charles so he could take JJ to school?
I did not.
During your interview with Lori Vallow, did she tell you at some point that since she wouldn't give Charles back the phone and he's screaming at her, that her daughter Tylee and her brother Alex came out?
She did.
Did she tell you that her daughter Tylee came out with a bat?
She did.
Did she tell you that Tylee sort of poked at Charles with the bat?
Yes.
While she and Charles were arguing?
Correct.
And did she tell you that Charles took the bat away from Tylee and Tylee sort of fell back or something?
Correct.
She ended up on the floor?
Correct.
And that Lori then told her to go outside to JJ?
Yes.
Did Lori Vallow ever tell you why her brother Alex Cox brought a loaded gun to her house?
She did not.
Did she tell you that she had asked Alex to come over to the house?
She did.
Did she ever tell you, well, let me say, so when she talked to you, she told you that she had wanted Alex to be there sort of to protect her in case anything went bad, right?
Correct.
So did she tell you why Alex didn't go to the door with her when Charles is pounding on the door being a jerk or whatever?
She did not.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it. That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.